something. I didn't know that about y'all. Mm-hmm. No. That is the same. Not
of acceleration. but it seems it's like an automobile. Would you drive your automobile, and let's say I'm going 40 miles an hour, and you're coming behind me at 35 miles an hour, I'm going to give you three choices. You want to pass me, would you press on the accelerator, buy a new car, or change your engine? What would you do?
Press on the car.
How?
Because
why?
Because I know that I'll keep my speed.
Who told you that?
Observation.
If you never were told that you could press on the accelerator, you would never do it. You'd still drive 35 miles and stay behind me. It's only because you were told. You have to be programmed to be able to press on an accelerator to move the car from 35 to 50. So it is true with your brain. You have to be told that you can shift the physics of your mechanism to do something that is not normal for it to do, and you call that mind. Somebody told you use your mind. You see, when you're a baby, like every one of us, we have to program us like a computer to tell us, use your mind. You don't have a mind. You can't even take it out and look at it. Psychology goes through a bunch of games with semantics only to prove that there is all physics, but they don't want to accept it.
What is the composition of man?
The composition of man is likeness and image. Likeness and image. Come, let us, not come, let me, make man in my own image, in our own image and likeness. We are made in what? An image and a likeness. What is the image and what is the likeness? We don't know. We got to concoct the physics to tell us that we are atoms or we are rates of acceleration in the atoms. And so when we blow the whole thing together, even when we reduce every solid mass to a tunic form that we can carry back, we come to a geometrical image. And then we come to our likeness. Everything seems to disappear into light. So what is man? Image and likeness. What is plant? Image and likeness. What is stone? Image and likeness. What is an animal? Image and likeness.
But what is the mind?
Whose mind?
What is the mind that I think I have?
Where do you get it from?
I was told that.
Who said you had a mind?
Do we have a soul?
Well, let's look at yourself. God made man in his own image, male and female created them. And God breathed the breath of life into man, and man became a living jackass. No, did he become a living jackass, a living mind, a living stone, a living tree? What did he become? No. He didn't even become a living man.
Living being.
He didn't become a living being. Your scripture is very specific. It says, God made man. God made a manifestation of his own image and likeness, that's out of geometrical relationship in a random universe that appears to have order. And in this orderness came forth entity, male and female, in its own makeup, that is positive and negative. And this positive and negative mechanism was called man. But this man was then called soul by breath of life being put into it. Respiration gives this mechanism, male or female, the capacity to be soul. Not the capacity to have a soul, or the capacity to be a mind. You don't even have a mind. There's no mention in the universal writings that man has a mind. We concocted this up to satisfy our shortcomings of our own self. All that is mentioned that man is soul. You don't even have to say this. You've got to understand it.
My soul. I still believe it.
Let me ask you a question. If I take flour, raisin, water, lard, and sugar, and I mix the whole thing and put it in an oven and bake it, or whatever they call it,
raisin bread.
Is there such a thing as raisin bread?
No.
That's only a name?
No.
Alright, then a name is only a sound. It doesn't have no existence. So we don't really exist. Man is soul. Man is a name. You found it yet?
All words.
What have you got?
Life.
And when you split the life, what have you got?
More life.
When you split more life, what have you got?
More life.
But you see, you're using a word to describe it, son. You're saying more life, more life, more life.
Right.
You are using sonic to describe luminescence. The only thing that actually exists for us in terms of communication is sonic. In the beginning was the word of communication. And the word was the God. Communication is in your brain. Sonic. And the word was God. Sonic is God. And the word was made flesh. Sonic became matter. And sonic dwelt in man. Manifestation. Can we catch it? You know this? What they call that in Zen? The clapping of two hands, right? What's the clapping of one hand? No. That's the clapping of one hand. Two? Yeah, that's the clapping of one hand. Most people don't, they think this all the time. Remember, they don't want to do that. This is because they did this, they program, and then when you say one hand, they continue doing this, forgetting that this is the clapping of one hand.
Consciousness
is something that we label ourselves. So it's a very difficult thing to realize yourself as God, you know. You aren't God.
I am both God and not God. I am not God until I know I am God. And I am not know I am God until I know I am not. The energy. Besides, the energy is everything. Now, that's all very nice, but however, I've been trying to dissolve myself repeatedly and I still exist.
Isn't that your simple question? When you're sound asleep, where are you? When you're sound asleep, where are you?
Consciously.
Not consciously, I'm saying, if you're conscious, then you're not sound asleep.
Without sleep, apparently, in sleep, I have another consciousness and dreams.
If you dream, then you're not sound asleep. I said, when you're sound asleep, my words are very simple. They're not complicated.
No,
when you're sound asleep, what are you?
Don't know where I am.
So if you don't know where you are, you're nothing.
Right.
Then don't you realize what God said? He made man in his own image and likeness out of nothing. And he retains us as a nothing and gives us the illusion that we are something. And we go around tooting our horn that we are something. We aren't anything.
Why not the brilliant God decides to give us back the illusion?
That illusion is because he wants to play the game of entertainment. Yes, he's a very entertaining God. Because I'll show you why he's an entertaining God. If you got pain, what do you want to get rid of the pain? Huh? Alright, when you get rid of it, how would you feel?
I feel better. Relief.
What is relief in terms of feeling? Joy. Alright, if you're poor, what do you want? And when you get the money, what do you feel?
Frustrated, not happy.
So if you're frustrated, you're still happy. But it's still joy. It's joy.
Yeah.
All right. If you're drunk, you want to be what?
Drunk.
All right. Sober. All right. Sober or drunk, but it's to get joy, right? If you're dying, what you want?
Life.
And if you want getting life back, how you feel?
I'm dying.
You're getting joy back. Whatever you're asking for, or whatever you're short of, you still end up craving joy. Don't kid yourself. You can be poor, you just want money, and it will only make joy when you get it. You can be dying, you're going to want life. What you're looking for is joy in many different shapes and forms to satisfy what you are not.
But I am nothing.
Of course. not. You're nothing if you want to be something. That's the joy of it.
Let's start
with
the
Of course. He is nothing and he is busy making a manifestation. He is the biggest desire, the biggest ego. Come, let us make world. Camera, light. Biggest movie show going in the universe. For who? Mother God. You call him daddy, don't you call him daddy God? If a father and a mother exist in a house, what do they want?
Baby.
Now, what do you think we are?
Baby.
So, well, that's the whole show?
Baby.
Of course. Did he tell you that we are children? So, get with it. What do you think children are supposed to do? Take care of the place. All right, so you take care of the place, there's nothing else to worry about.
In your religion, then, there would be no such thing as sin.
Religion?
It's a right manicure.
Religion is for the person who has to tie himself back to something. That's what the word religion means. Re means to go back, and Ligya means to bind. To bind yourself to something. If you are an expression of creative intelligence, there is no religion. There is responsibility. And responsibility is spirituality. Because it is love. There is no religion in this universe. These are man-made concepts that satisfy our sense of security. But what is actually here in this universe is the art of living by the art of dying, which is love. And you can only live until you know to die. Because life and death are one and the same. It's joy. Some people die for others, some people die for themselves. But it's all joy. They're dying for joy.
Okay, it's love. Yeah. It's love is joy.
Right.
And what we really crave is death and love both. Which is all our death and love, which are both joy. Which is nothing because it is time.
See this thing? How many hands it got?
None.
Good. If it has no hands, then it's only love. If it got two hands, you're going to see something else. You're going to see in your own mind duality. Einstein already proved and blew your theories, you know, a long time. Energy is equal to the mass times the velocity of light squared. Now, we don't live in an atmosphere, we live in an atmosphere. And we are all atoms. The test is going to go in. Yourself. So, what Jesus said, love the Lord thy God with all your mind and heart and soul, and your neighbor as yourself. So how are you going to start to love me if you don't love yourself? Common sense will tell you you can't love me if you love yourself.
But I can't. Really,
what are you going to do? And if you want to love yourself, you first got to find out why God made you. Because you got to love God, who is you already, but you don't understand how he comes to be you. That's yourself. Yourself, God, has decided to be you in order for you to love me by first loving self, which is you. This is his game. This is all men's game, based upon a simple thing called desire. Daddy and mother comes together to form what? It's a desire. We wouldn't be here if there was no desire. You ever see the ocean? All right, well, tell me if the ocean got waves.
If it had waves, yeah.
How?
Oh, the
moon. There can be no waves in the ocean unless there's a wind. The moon can do all it wants unless it moves the wind. Move that water.
The wind and the,
if the wind blows upon the water and form waves,
if the wind blows out upon the water and forms waves,
ask yourself this question. We only have importance as long as there is wind. So if you want to be a tidal wave, you got to make sure they got a big wind blowing out there. If you want to be a bubble, you got to make sure there's a big wind blowing out there to make you a bubble. Whatever you want to be in that water, make sure the wind is doing it. Now if the wind don't blow, there is no wave. Now the wave depends upon the wind to come to the surface out of the water to look at a wave. So, equally true, this creative intelligence has the desire to do something for us to come out to exist.
Yeah, I don't need a view.
You sure
not? The way in sonically I can define myself as a human being.
You're a very, then you're mostly a life person, isn't it?
Probably.
And if you're probably, then I will willingly learn from your friend.
Yeah, if there is desire in the very nature of creation, one, behind that is desire, and I'm a human being with desire. Am I desiring all desires for legitimacy?
No, they're all predestined to where their legitimacy is. There is no legitimacy. If it's behind it all and you are a result of desire, then it's predestined. There is no legitimacy to desire. The desire is gone. Your individuality and your claim to be personal involved with the desire is no claim no more because it's predestined for you to be where you are.
Just as I have found no, so where is the free will thing?
Who said you had any?
I assumed behind it.
When did he say that? After he said, "Pardon not my will, but your will be done," how could he say that? He never said he had any free will, and he has surrendered to God's will. Then he's the biggest liar ever was. He said your hairs on your head were numbered. That automatically removed free will. My will, not your will. Then I will cop out right now. That's what you said. So he said, not my will, but thy will. Therefore, there is no free will. You got to read the thing right, and then find out this is free will and what we call free will. Only God's will is free. Man don't have free will. How could he have free will? This is a creation. Where is he going to get the free will from? He doesn't have the right even to create himself. He's a result, not a cause. But your mind, which is playing games with you, is busily trying to decipher and analyze for you where you fit in the picture, to shake your hand at your invisible personality and say, hey, what are you doing to me? And why me of all people? You couldn't pick some other joker? We do this to ourselves. But you're doing just the same. And you got to do it if you don't like it or not.
Well, how about if, it is always said, if you reason so much, you reason yourself out on a lot of things. If you follow your intuition, you just follow to do the right thing, even if it's, and it resides on it, beneficial. That is also a predestination, I guess.
It's like a man wrote a movie script. All the parts for all the players. They don't have a single doggone thing to do with the movie. Not even to put up the money. Not even for the equipment. All they got to come in and do is the acting. And each one is given his script. And you could be an Oscar winner 50 times and you're given the role to play a beggar, you got to play the role of a beggar if you don't like it. And you could be a non-entity and you're given the role to play a king, you got to play the king. This is exactly what we are in this whole process, so we don't want to accept it. We are actors. Because it's the only way we can tell ourselves the food.
Right?
You know, the man that wants to talk, don't communicate. And at the same time, when he's not talking, he's communicating. Now, he can talk without moving his hands. And at the same time, he can talk and move his hands. It is what we need at the time we need it. That's what will happen to us. If you like it or not.
You don't believe we write our own
play? If we write our own play?
You don't believe that we did. You talked about what you did in
progress. Oh, can you write the play when you're an actor? The first thing the director show you off is luck. If you're an actor, how can you write the play?
Well, I see what you're saying.
Our ego would be so fantastic to say we are going to write the play. Then the producer and the choreographer and the director have already done that. And we are merely here to act.
Aren't you dividing yourself from that? Creating a duality there when you say that you are not the producing the director. I mean, you are not true. It's okay at all. If you want something to fit, you can make it fit by your attitude. So
in the first place,
depending on how you look at
it, you have to see the very statements that the great people put out, and then you have to look at it, if they're saying truth or not. In your question that you brought up, the answer to it is this. You see the father. But at the same time I say to you, I am the father of one. What do you understand about it?
About what?
What I just said.
If you and the father are one.
If you see me, you see the father. I and the father are one.
I
see you, I see the father.
You are God.
And I say you and the father are one.
You are God.
You?
Oh, God.
You know, your scriptures only give you one way to find God. It says, be thou still and known, and I am God.
Be still and known, and I am God, yes.
Alright, but you got to understand what you're saying. Be quiet and understand that it. The thing you call I am, that thing that you call I am, that is the God in you. Now, if this chair is going to say, I am a chair, so that's our tape recorder, that's the tape recorder for inside. I am a tape recorder. Now, try and take only two I am and look at them. Tape recorder, you can see chair, you can see, but you can't see the I am. You can't see the I am in nothing. I say, I am Adano, you couldn't see my I am, no matter how I try.
Well, what's the purpose of life? What's the purpose of life?
again,
well, you may laugh, but I mean, it's a fair question.
Yeah. Yes, you've got a question. Yeah. What is the purpose of life?
This morning, you got one
ask yourself before you ask the question, what is life in order for some purpose? That's exactly it. What is life? Can life have a purpose? Right. Isn't that answer your situation? Life is a process. Right, that's true. Life is a process. This is not a process, a purpose.
Life would exist whether it exists or not.
Right.
It's just not something to be defined or undefined.
So it doesn't have a purpose.
I guess you go to, instead of your life having a purpose, your awareness having a purpose. So you can get
that. The moment you talk of purpose, you want to exclude yourself from everybody. To be
I was just talking in generality.
In general,
right now.
See, when you come to talk about yourself, and you use the
term. Okay. We're going to have to bring it up. I'm sorry, I hate to do this. I know you didn't get that started in time, but.
Well, let's finalize one thing in your mind. Make it clear so you don't have any illusions about the study. Every scripture in the world and every teacher of the world all admit that God is some.
Some?
Yeah, some.
In the beginning was the word, good word. The song, that's all you have to. And the word was with God. Song is in the atmosphere. And the word was God. That's something that actually is. Song is the only reality. God is sound, and the word was made flesh. Sonics became matter.
So what's the relationship? Sound is light as well. Sound creates light.
Of course. Every physicist knows that. Light doesn't make sound.
Isn't vibration more appropriate way? I mean, if like sound is a distinct concept.
If you don't have a sound, where your vibration would be? If you don't have a tongue, what your vibration would be to you? A useless vibration. You must have audition to be of value to you as a human being, if you want to call yourself a human being. Unless you can hear it, it doesn't have a single...
That's the energy.
Energy without hearing it is absolutely useless. You've got to hear energy.
I mean, you can be deaf
in the first place. There's no deaf person. Every deaf man hears about the sonic.
In a function,
it's
the same thing.
That's not
the problem.
No, man, that's not sound. Sound is the thing, not vibration.
I trust vibration
causes. Sound causes vibration. Sound gives vibration. Vibration cannot cause sound. Sound has to have intelligence in it. Vibration don't have intelligence. It takes intelligence to make sound. You have to have intelligence to make sound. So that eliminates the sense of vibration. Sound is beyond vibration. And wait till your physics blow your mind away with their equipment and prove to you that you are living in a sound universe. If it doesn't,
whatever you want to call it.
All right, well, what is this now?
Thumb.
Basic fundamental of your hand. This is the thumb. It is this one. Little finger. No matter if we know it's either a sonic or we know that this is solid or crystalline state, it is going to be different, but still, this is my thumb, this is my little finger. And this is my ring finger, and this is my index finger, and this is my middle finger. You want to give them identity of personality to satisfy the fact that you can differentiate. I know the doggone thing is my hand. That's the common name for it.
Well, I use the photo, ether, etc. Fingers,
yeah.
So the five intelligences are these same five personifications, deification. Now, there's a reason for this deification of personification for master. If somebody teaches you something that you never knew before, and every time you go to use that information, who will you give the credit to? Good. So, the spiritual man is a man who does not tear down the traditional source of his information, because it is what? It is the axis. It is the axis of his life. It is his life axis. It is his source of point of reference for his traditional makeup. And by so doing, he keeps the personification of his alma mater going for him as a means of a lightness blanket. With a figure that I know that you can have no strength without any reference, because it doesn't have any credence if you don't have any reference to which you get your knowledge from.
But by having a reference, you put a value on it.
Good. And therefore that becomes a life action.
And that puts it back into duality.
But you need a duality in order to survive with the optics and sonics. If you don't have a duality or a yin-yang, you can't string yourself up in no way. So a colossal illusion is necessary for a delusion to give the feeling of a reality being the ideal, when there is no reality but the ideal. And what is the ideal? I-D-E-A-L. It's a gambler's game. Providing you your dealer with your eyes. Deal yourself first, then you come into this universe as a God man, and then everybody else is God people. If you deal yourself in last, and everybody else is God, then you may end up being a similar being. See, a master is one who deals himself for this. When Jesus says, God among men, and his name is Emmanuel, he coming down as an avatar, he deals himself in first. The God man has to deal himself first. The real self first. Therefore, this is not my kingdom. I don't deal myself a kingdom with it. He deals the realization where he is from or what he is when he decides to act upon the phenomenal stage. The phenomenal stage is a transitory condition of his senses. So he cannot lay claim to this and say, this is what I belong to, this is what I gotta die for. No. I is dying for anything, I ain't coming for anything, I is I within the I itself, and remains aloof. But as long as it goes to remain aloof, it must deal itself the highest state of the I. I am that I am. I and the Father are one, that's the highest state the I can stay in. And as long as I stay in that state, then now I can say, okay, I can go in this transitory state and be cheerful. These are all terms in which to reinforce your divine highness over the minuscule, minor, mini highness that tends to be puffed up. You see, when we realize our self-godness within the God that is created for us to respect, we will realize that we are respecting ourselves. But it's very difficult to respect or worship yourself, because the subconscious mind is a built-in safety factor that makes you feel guilty that you are a negative.
Why do you say that the built-in safety factor?
If you were allowed to have a runaway with your ego, dear friend, you would destroy yourself before you ever got started. Because there would be no break. What is a break in the first place in a car? A built-in safety factor for that car, or else the car would be running down the hill without any brakes, and the car is designed to run. It's designed to stop or brake. What do you buy a car for? To drive it, right?
and the motor, which is a motor for the motor car.
Not motor. So why is motor sneaky little breakdown?
It is a big 3 or 40 horsepower engine. Horsepower.
Man, I'm the big jig of this machine. Are you rinky dinky brakes with the biggest one? Yeah. You try and go so far, you think it's going to go. Just like this mechanism here. I am the big thing. So what really makes it go? Hooey, man. That little your complex thing is really just if
you that's an automatic natural structure thing, an unconscious realm to control something. But it's possible to drive a car without brakes.
I was going to say it's not
takes skill.
All right. If it takes skill, throw skill backwards and heal your back.
LLISIKS.
You get your liquid. And if you take away your S, you can kill yourself with it. SKIMM?
How can you kill yourself and not yourself?
So S is yourself.
So you lose yourself?
SKIMM, you know, you can do it to yourself if you're not that dissociative factor. You blow your cool.
Falling back and back.
accept the fact that you are nothing but a scapegoat in the plan designed for the depreciation of some guy who says he's the creator. You know, this is a creation. Let's say the four of us decided to put it together and give it individuality and can talk back to us. But no matter how it is talked out to us and proves itself that it is a shape, it is the four of us who put it together, it ain't going to satisfy this part of us because we know he just put himself together, we put it together. In our minds, we put it together. In his mind, he's really telling us, he put himself together. That's exactly what we are. We are the creation. In our mind, we are telling this created intelligence. That's exactly what we are. We are the creation. In our mind, we are telling this created intelligence that we put ourselves together. And he's looking at it and says, continue, my son. Have your game, have your bone. Then you're satisfied that you didn't put yourself together. You will see now why I am here. And in my Vedic way, or my ridiculous way, and in my traditional way, or in my religious way, or in my helter-skelter stupidity way, you will accept me as Father Mother God, wake up every Sunday morning, ding dong, go to church, push the key in the door, accept the ritual, and continue to worship me sitting outside here. The only person that the movie actor has respect for
is the owner.
Is the owner of the business that keeps that movie factory going, otherwise he's out of the business. Otherwise he has no respect for nobody. He's stopped all and everything.
But the movie actors only act because they know the owner and they know they receive wages. But what about the actors? The audience or how does the actors keep acting? That don't know it, that don't know the
honor. Yeah,
that don't get the
way. Those are like people who walk in the street until they will step on a wet blanket or a pool of wet water, and then they wake up from the street in the dream of sleepwalking. You know, I used to encounter people who just sleepwalking, and the cure for them is put a blanket wet right at the foot of the bed. And let them go through that they're sleeping on the. When they feel they're going to get up in the night and do the sleepwalking, as soon as they get up and step on that wet blanket, they wake up. Or that wet towel, they jump right up, they open right up. The shock cure is that they're awake for the first time and then they realize positively, without doubt, that they do walk in their sleep. Now, when we get this root shock, when we get this root shock from our sleepwalking in the consciousness that we are so-called creators, we can do nothing wrong, and that we have no one to account for, or account to. The root shock is that we wake up and see ourselves acting a pre-arranged program to suit the producer. And then we accept our role, that we are working for wages, and the wages are called bliss. Now, the wages of sin, or missing the mark of stupidity, is death, it is somnambulism, a form of going back to sleep again. And the wages of understanding are non-stupidity, if you want to call it that way, is the waking up, the real waking up, and that is acceptance. And not death, but to learn the first two. But you need the first one to help you the second one in order to appreciate the third one. That's what I believe in. You get the gift of evolution. Without the first one, without the communion with the faith, that means without the contact with the same person who has got the foresight on how to modify the second condition, forgiveness of sins, on how I miss the mark in my ignorance because I'm not fully saved, I can be classified as insane in many levels by the irrational actions of my behavior. But without the first one, I can't do handle the second one. But then when I come back to the first one, I can handle the second one, which gives me the benefit of the third one. Life is eternal if I don't refuse acting the role or trying to select the role of my importance in the role. Good.
Now you reduce the resonance of blood.
Me, I love me. We would say to friends, give a good example. He's talking about loving yourself, you know, the point to love everybody. So here we had one big root on the table, and he says, when they all, we put down the stool there, he says, hey, Adam, you always talk about loving your neighbor yourself. He says, yeah. He says, you don't mind I demonstrate my version, okay? So he took his plate, he reached over to the root, and he cut off the part of the root and put it in his plate. He says, I love myself, the rest is you guys. And they think this is the root. I said, that's very good. Yeah, see? Mm-hmm. At least you're honest with yourself. Now, we don't think you're bluffing. Now, we don't think you're stingy. We think you love yourself so much that you'll get a belly ache, but don't get to us. That's how we love it. Now, you think that portion of this whole road that they give you in your belly ache, we're thankful that you're eating it and bring you that portion and give us belly ache. And the portion that you bring us, they're not giving us belly ache. You see, one man's food is not a man's gambler. Wherever you must teach your box to go to this movie, balcony, front row, or dealer's chair. All right. Make sure you buy a dealer's chair next time. All right. You might as well trade the baton. It's a beautiful position to enjoy the show. The whole thing is a show. You just don't want to act. That is our provider, a beautiful movie. He's the producer, the director, the owner. He's his own audience. He's his own actor. But he likes us to fool ourselves that we're doing it. We put it all together. You know something? The actor is such a naive individual. He believes he put the whole picture together. He believes that he makes all the box office and all the people that go around prodding him. You know who puts things all together? The U.S. Treasury Department. That's right, the U.S. Treasury Department. Us little fellows who mark that little piece of paper says we pay for jobs just to be on their boat. You know, that money that goes to put the thing out in operation. Substance. Divine substance makes it work. Right.
If the tree is cut, if the tree falls in the middle of the forest, and there's no water, no, I'm serious, because I asked you this to see where you're standing and what you're talking about.
Right.
There's no ears around to hear it. It's just sound.
Yes.
All right. Of course there is.
Nothing I can.
Yes. Well, I don't think we can know. I never could have done
that. That's because people who say no don't have no hearing. They only have listening. Well, they get such a thing listening and hearing.
Explain that.
Well, do you listen with your ears or you hear with your ears?
Hear it. That's your trigger.
What is it that you hear? Or what is it? How do you hear something? When you hear something, you pay no attention to how you hear it, simply because it's an automatic behavior for you to interpret or compute what's passing through your ears. That's hearing. When you're listening, you're making a determined effort to synchronize with what you want to listen with in order to differentiate what is it you're listening from or to. You see? So when a musician is playing, he's not hearing notes, he's listening to notes. But an audience is not a musician, and they are hearing music. They go to hear the music, they don't go to listen to the music. We, the audience, hear the musician play. But the musician, he's not hearing what the audience is hearing.
He's listening to what he has to play, unless he makes a mistake. So he has to keep on what is called measured audition.
This is nerves.
Whereas the audience who listens is not doing that. They are hearing. They go there to hear the entertainment, they go to be entertained. So they don't know when he's making a mistake or when he's not making a mistake, or he missed a note or not. And how many can tell if he goes and missed a note? Even them don't know. Even the conductor don't know himself, because Segovia has mucked it through many times and matched it right at his own recording. And they never found out until one day he spoke it at what is called a master seminar. He said, a good musician who knows the score can play it so uniquely, even if he missed one bar, it could never be known. Because you can synchronize other notes to sound dramatic, and even the best conductor would not recognize. This is telling Charlie Bird that, a conversation between Charlie Bird. He says, therefore, in the art of music, do not be overly concerned about what your audience listens or hears, or what your musician has to listen to or hear. Be more concerned with the continuity of the piece. That you don't bring a harsh note into a soft note to create a jar. Because music is not what is notation correct or auditional sonic correct. So that's not the purpose of music. Because if a man is going to look all the time to hear accurately the score and lose the gist of the score, he's not musically inclined. Versus the person who only wants to hear the flow of the music. Because I'm dating for two guys who were ideal at this, Kreisler and Heisler. They were able to play the music. They were making notation mistakes from the actual even to the composer or to the director. Because they were imparting what is called flow to the music. And so that's when the whole purpose of music, and that's why he chose the guitar over the violin. He used to be a violinist before, and he was a constant violinist. And he was up in Sapa as a boy at 18 years of age. Then he discovered the guitar. It's because he found that his violin may be too over conscious of notation and not enough flow. And only the gypsies were able to flow with their violin. Now they weren't conscious of notes. They weren't interested in notes. They were interested in flow of music. Then he switched to the guitar, because the guitar had more to offer in terms of harmony on a bigger scale like a piano. And he could go into the low notes and the high notes and the bass and stuff. Then he switched over to the guitar. So he was playing, he could play the guitar like a chamber music or play like a flamenco instrument. He chose the classical guitar. He actually made the guitar famous by bringing out the flow. He gave the guitar flow for the first time. Now one would say, here's a maestro of the guitar and play the guitar with such great quality and is recognized by the world. And if you ask him personally, Mr. Segovia, what kind of guitar music you like to listen to? He says, how the Western country guitar became a particular piece of music to the American growth happened over the European. You see, Europeans did not have a musical style for the guitar in a folk style. It was all classically set up, except the flamenco, which is a folk style. But outside of it, there is no folk style for the guitar in foreign countries or in Europe. Yet in America, where the guitar was never really brought to any focus, on a folk style level, it was always played by a traveling cowboy as a means to get into reverie. So between the cowboy Western style music and the flamenco, the Western was the nearest thing to a folk style developed with much flamenco in this feeling of emphasis.
I did plan experiments
when
I found that Rabbi Shankar's numero uno with plants, Bach next, and Beethoven, rock music made it sick, but country Western, they ignored. It had no effect one way or the other.
He
it's the neutral state.
Right. I used to read the basis, you know, listen to it on, work construction.
Right.
All construction people, man, they're workers.
By deactivating the brain to identify the light that is pulsating through the body.
his nature provides. When he does that, then he's a free soul. But until that time, he's bound by his ideation, bound by his environment, and bound by tradition, and feedback from his hereditary patterns of his life. More so during the pregnancy of the mother, when she's carrying the child, the 9 months basic priority opioid mechanism. That's the mode in which you're born from. Everything that happens to you from then on is preempted by the feedback of the mother, who monitors your behavior pattern from the time you are alive to the time you die, if you are not psychologically. This is what it meant. I did this thing for the third and fourth generation. Though he appears to the individual moving along detached from appearance of the umbilical cord, yet in his fringes, magnetically and electrically, the parent monitors our behavior, and we pride ourselves with our own ego that we are running our lives, which in reality we are not doing. We are not even capable of meditating with that type of connection. We'll be fast with meditation. We'll be fooling ourselves. The result of meditation is liberation, not from the environment, but for the environment. That's why you meditate. How to be liberated for it, so that you can live it and not learn from it. But until that time, you practice. So most of it will appear in books and in groups talking about meditation, but never really get into the actual truth about meditation. Ask you a
question. How do you think, if what you say is true, say a meditation is kind of freedom, that individual that who is not a very common individual is free from other forces in his environment that we all usually contending with. Now, we live in a very sophisticated society where people go to Sata and study and go to metaphysical bookstores, all trying to find a secret of that freedom. However, what happens to the individual who isn't in the cosmopolitan area, who perhaps even is illiterate, who lives in the mountains of Tennessee, and yet when you go there, when you pass through, you see an individual who you know is free. To feel his freedom. He's a very high, honest human being. Now, who taught him to be free? How did someone come out of the mountains free? And I can't come out of college free. I mean, I want to know why.
Your concept of freedom is not such a freedom as involved that I'm talking about.
Well, he is free of the forces of the society.
What forces? I'm talking of
freedom. Compulsive behavior.
I'm talking of freedom from death.
Freedom from death.
Death is your last enemy. To him that overcometh Allah shall for the second time, the salvation of fear in the house of the Lord. I'm talking of the art of dying and the answer of death. That's the freedom I'm talking about. I'm not talking of freedom for society.
No, I mean the kind of freedom that one would say is love.
That's not freedom. That's attachment. Freedom from death, which is your last enemy. An enemy. That's what the great master Jesus said. He didn't call it a friend, he called it an enemy. It is something you have to contest with. Not psychological death, physiological death. You have to master physiological death. To be free. You have to learn the art of how to die every day. Paul, when he was in the body, he rebuked the very people that were living by saying, I rebuke you in your rejoicing, for I live and die daily in the Lord. It is the art of dying physiologically that is the freedom we are talking about. When you hear the Eastern people talk of meditation, they are not talking of freedom from anxiety. They are talking of freedom from death. The mastery of death. You must master death while you are alive. You can't master it in your death. You can't experience the invasion when you're dead. become so massive as while you're alive. That's the kind of freedom you're talking about. So you see, the freedom that is being publicized is not really the freedom. You have to go back into the Bible. And it's in the Bible you see what the freedom actually is that they're talking about. That's psychological freedom. Freedom for life, not from life. But how are you free for life? Is by mastering death. You understand that? That's a different type of freedom.
For Zalto, freedom.
Zalto?
Or what's the freedom?
When you master death, it is the evidence that occurs when you die. Even when you die, the evidence is there. Proof that you have mastered it when you are alive. You must master death alive before the evidence will be validated by those who believe in you or don't believe in you. They'll say that man did master his knowledge. Because what happens to his body at the end of his life will be a testimony of his belief. Now we have that evidence here all the time. They call them saints. Jesus talk of death. He raised the dead. Yet at his own death, it is not the fact that he died on the cross. It is the fact that what happened after his death, the significance of the mastery of death. Now that's in your figment of imagination because it happened 2,000 years ago. But we have evidence of people who don't live that long. Not too far off in 1962 in this country. But Hansi Yogananda passed away in this country and the body showed no signs of decay after his death. That kind of freedom we're talking about. Freedom from death. You see, there are only four ways to be born, and there are four ways to die. And that is what we call freedom. You're born not remembering your past life. You're born remembering your past life. You're born by immaculate conception, or existential insemination. You're born direct materialization like Star Trek. Now you die, you rot. You die, you don't rot. You die, you take your body, nobody finds it. Or you just translate your body like Tiare, a woman that lives in this country, automatically translated her body into life. Annalise Tiare. She was an American woman that lived. So this is what we're talking. This kind of thing. You are not looking for magical power, they're not looking for miracles. The truly free man is a simple, normal man that lives every day with you, works with you. In fact, the gentleman that can either be free. It is so obvious that you wouldn't recognize it. You would not even know that he's free. He thinks that an ordinary individual goes through. But when the time comes for you to have the experience or the freedom, he will give it to you. You will need to have that experience. And then you know what the freedom is all about. You see, Jesus spoke of this freedom. When he said, the sheep know the shepherd, and the shepherd know the sheep. And those who know my voice, or hear my voice, they follow me. That is the kind of freedom he's talking about, a freedom from death. Those individuals who knew the art of dying within their own body, recognize Jesus immediately, and he recognized them immediately. That's the kind of freedom they were talking about, you see. But our churches never came out with that. You see, I grew up in the church, Catholic church, prayed, but they could not answer these questions because they were always thinking of some psychological answer and not getting to the true psychological truth. And until we met or have men who have done this in our lives, we can't follow it. We can't believe it. We have to be exposed to people who have had that type of experience, that can vouch for that type of experience. Then we can trust their experience to help us to have the same experience.
But you think it's tradition then that comes right down from Christ. If the tradition is broken someplace, then that whole knowledge is lost, isn't it?
Nothing is lost.
Unless some person uncovers it by himself today.
You see, Jesus said a long time ago, when he had John the Baptist,
no man born of woman greater than John, who is United at a time. Right there in front of everybody, he is giving that to the people, telling them who John the Baptist actually was. Since the one first. John the Baptist, who realized that the one in front of him was supposed to do much more work, he said, no, you baptize him, because he realized that this man would carry the work further on for that realization, the mastery of death. But they argued back and forth. Now picture yourself two grown men arguing through the throat of the water each other's head. It don't make any sense. But then Jesus went on to say, suffer it to be so. In other words, endure it, accept it. For this is the way of righteousness. That this way of finding a spiritual person who has the ability to open a consciousness in you, that he can turn you on to mastery of death. Suffer it, endure it, find it, look for it. Go through the tribulations to find it. Go through the anxiety and the sadness to find that individual. And then you find it. That is the way of righteousness. There is no other way. That is the only true way there is to freedom. The mastery of death in the human body. Now when you find it, no matter where it comes from, no matter who's got it, then you automatically find yourself here to God. But it'll find you first. So you see, we cannot seek a spiritual teacher or a spiritual individual to give it to us. It is that individual whose cosmic awareness, whose responsibility by God to seek you out, to help you to realize it. The shepherd knows his own sheep. He don't go pick up any kind of sheep. He knows his own sheep. The realized man knows who is ready for the freedom of the soul and mastery of death. In the teeming millions of life, he knows who is ready. He will give that individual, wherever he is, red, black, green, or brown, male or female, invalid or baby, he will give that individual, that soul, that spirit, as a
I've since long, long ago, I learned to accept that I would die. And I don't want not to accept that I would die. I mean, I don't think that it's rational or reasonable or honest to go around in pursuit of eternal life. And particularly, the passion, it sounds to me like being attached to this body. I practiced the last 5 years not to be attached to this body, and now the idea that this body is having another kind of eternity, it doesn't sound.
So
seems corrupt.
What is corrupt? This is corrupt for nothing. What is
corrupt?
The body is the temple of God. As above, so is below. God cannot be separated from the body. The body is God already, in manifestation and in action. So this is the supreme temple, not the pagoda, or the or a synagogue, or a church, that's not the temple. This is the temple, and the only real temple there is. Now, if you get hypocritical by denying it, then what have you done to yourself? By detaching yourself from God, you become an idiot. But then you respect it, and you understand it, and liberate it. Then you claim your Godness in God, you claim your God self. You can't do that until you recognize it and accept it. That is your freedom. That is your choice. That's your heritage. That is your divine birthright. Now, if you get created and put away a killer or commit suicide, now remember, Master Jesus had 3 trials for his physical body. One, what he would put inside of it. He could eat anything. Why? Yet the first test was food, a test in which stone that he could turn by magical powers into food and eat it just to avoid fasting. Most people live today, you know, in many parts of the world, not eating a meal for weeks, some are dying from starvation. They'll do anything, they'll kill, just to get something in their stomach. This temple of God is going through that type of a trial, tribulation, desecration, simply because of lack of knowledge, through ignorance, and the karmic law. All right, here comes the spiritual teacher to show us the freedom. The freedom is to rise
living people we don't live by bread alone, the simplest form of matter, as a food. We don't live by that alone. Or an indirect form of energy through the mouth. But by every word, that means every vibratory impulse from this environmental atomic field that is coming into us from the archetypal atoms that enters through the mouth of God, which is the medulla oblongata of the brain. Now, if the doctor were to stick it to the skin, you die instantly. If you stick it to the cellar, you're far out for life. Yet at the same time, within the same perimeter, if you don't touch it, you can correct a very common disease that most doctors can't correct. The death news. Just 0.5 more centimeters, you will kill that person. 0.5 centimeters minus from where the point of entrance in the medulla, you can cure the death news. This is done to this. Where the death news can be made to soft and healed, because they go right in the same area of the medulla, in the needle. But they don't touch the medulla. They measure through exam and come right up to there and make the definite person comfortable. Now right there is death and right there is life. But it is how you measure life and how you measure death. Alright. After Jesus covered his first trial, learning how to feed oneself from the medulla. But he had to know how to eat first. He didn't do 40 days and 40 nights just like that. He had to prepare himself a long time to do that type of marathon fasting, let alone the common day. The second style, or rare step that his human body goes through, is to get rich. Everybody wants to cop out. Who don't want to cop out? You know anybody who wants to cop out? Everybody, as soon as the going gets rough, he wants to freak out. He wants to throw a jug over the hill and die. That is committing suicide. That is what it is. Destroying this body that you didn't make. Alright? What's the freedom in that? Don't tempt the Lord. You didn't make the body, why tempt the creative intelligence by trying to destroy it? And if you destroy it, we have to conquer it because we use our own will. When we have to conquer it, we may have to pay a penalty for it because we didn't have the right to destroy it, we didn't have the right to make it. So we have to come to some form. We can't blame God for that. We got to blame ourselves for that. It's a natural law. You do something that you are irresponsible for, you have to pay for it. Your irresponsibility makes you liable. So he says, don't tempt the Lord. Well, as a boy, I used to picture Brother Jesus standing up here, and I was told that the fireman said, there's a junk, but he was junk. It sounds kind of comical, but this is what your mind would tend to picture someone wanting to jump, an angel will hold him up. The mind knows that there are angelic forces. The mind can see angelic forces, those who are able to see their voices. They are there, but they aren't there for our playing, or to be challenged, or to be put in a category or a position where they are forced to take care of us. They are working pretty hard to keep the universe going as it is. But we aren't supposed to go through our physical library just to prove their existence, to get us to avoid physical complications. So the second step, don't desecrate the body or the godness of yourself by trying to commit suicide. So the third thing you would want now, if you don't commit suicide, if you don't tap out, and the only reason you might want to tap out is because the going gets tough. And what if the going gets tough? Because you're insecure. You don't have enough. You always want to. That's your insecurity that's causing you to tap out. So the next step, the last and most important step, will be give you the world. Providing everything that you can hang on to. Attachment. So, you know, it's very important thing. You can't carry a step in your diary. How can you hang on to your breath in your diary? Which are so attachment to any physical thing is a ridiculous idea in the end. It is only something to use. Things are here to be used. It's not to be attached to the skin or jungle. You don't have to use them, but you have to be responsible for them. You have to take care of them. Because we are in essence a steward. We are in essence a representative of the divine principle. And if we don't take care of it, we are going to be liable for it. And nobody is going to point us but our own self, through our own mistakes, through our own self, we can find ourselves. third test is provide us with objects to attract us. And so this intelligence or ego, nature of the man, Jesus presented the image of giving the word to him. And he said, in very own simple words, to master that type of a problem, or the freedom is getting behind this state of ignorance, go away negative power, remove ego, stop bugging me, I don't need to be attached to it, nothing need to be attached to it. And he came out of the mountain, there's no need for the mountain no more, there's no need for the desert. The real mountain is here, the real desert is here. Then you make the journey up to see the truth in your head and decide where you want to be. You come out and live in the woods. You're not in the hills of Tennessee or in the hills of Mongolia. You're living with mankind, wherever you want. You find yourself. Now, when you come out into the world, you don't try to perform miracles. Because you can just come out again. And if you want to,
if you can hurry up on the car.
Well, still coming up on the cross, remember this. Jesus will not come up on the cross by his own karma. Most people don't know that, they will never know that. The birth and the death of a spiritual teacher is predetermined by the karma of the disciples.
Something is wrong with the balloon. It's not holding. And that's exactly what we are at that point. Now, the moment it holds, the first thing they do is put it to the breast to nurse. Simply because, why? This is shut down. It's holding here now. The pump. To force this to do what? Make this work, eat. So, automatically, this action of constricting and dilating is an interrelationship with the lungs and the mouth. So they put the baby. And it's a suction action for the baby to start the process of internal maintenance of the organs on time. Yet, strange, when the baby takes the first nursing from the mother, and we know the milk is white milk. When the baby has his first bowel movement, the diaper is black as tar. Now where did all this waste matter come from? All it had inside there was just little milk, few drops of white milk. Goes to show you there's some accumulated waste matter from mouth to anus of dead wastes. By virtue of the mother feeding it through her own organisms to form it, and then it stored the waste off for the first input pressure of mass in the form of milk to push the dead waste out. Then the next nursing, the second nursing, the diaper again is dark, greenish. Don't look normal, but still it's pushing their waste out. Then the third milk, then it looks normal. Then we find there's a valid reason for the shape of the anatomy, for the quanta of mass moving through from the input of the pressure to the waste deposit. It takes 3 meals to push out. So if you eat breakfast this morning, the dead waste that you push out before you eat your breakfast will be yesterday's lunch. If you're on time. If you're not on time, you're not going to go to the bathroom. You can't sleep either. If you're running ahead, you're diuretic. Something wrong. The timing is off. You're either too fast or too slow. If it's too fast, they call it hyper. Too slow, they call it hypo. The problem is transport, timing to the mass. But if you're on time, then it can be clocked. But you yet at lunchtime yesterday will pass out this morning. And what you ate last night at supper will pass out at lunchtime. And what you eat this morning will pass out tonight. In that rhythm. And this is the first establishing of living to eat, to get sick. But you take a child, you put it down, and leave it. It can't function on its own because it doesn't have the logic. It all is biological. So it will see this object. It doesn't know what it is. And what is the first thing will it do with it? Put it in its mouth. And you come back and you hear it going, oh my God, what did I do? But then you saw, you got to hit them all over to get it out. But that's how it's going to learn. And then we look at our own selves and all our ancestors back to the dawn of time. There was not a way to learn. So, but it takes you 30 years to mug it up. To get your logic working for you in a rational way. You can't go it any faster. See, that's the peculiar phenomenon of this world. It's all pre-programmed timing. From your DNAs, your RNAs, and your hormones. So to live, to eat, to get sick is a rational period of the organism, and it's the responsible period of the parent to observe and maintain so that the child doesn't hurt itself. And one time I asked my parents, why they call you parents? My dad laughed. He said, we're always paying the rent, son. Mm-hmm. You grow up with a skeleton, you're 2 feet. Mm-hmm. That's why they call them parents. Most out of that. He had a very good way of putting the answer in my head. So I didn't have illusions about the word. We pay the rent. Allah, we pay you, obey. When you pay it, you do what you want. The fourth rule is to live to eat. Not to get sick. This is obvious after you hurt yourself many times, you're going to want to make sure that you function without sickness. By that time you're going into your 30s and 40s, you're not knocking around too much with your health because you don't have too many arms or eyes to buy back. Once they go to control, you lose them. They're not so easy, they don't go back. The parts bank is not a reliable place. As one person says, the parts may not fit. So rather be satisfied with your own parts and take care of it. So to live, to eat, not to get sick. It pushes it better. This here can lead to a type of monotony, though it's a very rational evolution of the health in the person. But can be monotonous because you'll be too busy trying to eat not to get sick, and other things will come up that you can't relate to, and you got to cancel one for the other. So the monotony of it is going to be obvious after a while. So therefore you have to lock into a time-lapse system that is going to allow you to utilize the right eating to stay healthy. If that was all there is to nutrition, to live, to eat, not to get sick, and the monotony that will come from it, it's kind of preposterous to create an organism and just turn it loose into a wanton environment to do that. Merely the fact that it can fly from planet to planet in time to come, wanting to find the same thing or none at all. There must be something more unique about the organism, something more unique. And if nutrition was the instruction given to the organism to start with, eat everything there is that moves on the face of the earth, it should be for food and for medicine, and no other type of instruction took such an important aspect, then the key to the future of the organism must be locked up in nutrition. And the lifestyle must be locked up in nutrition, but we may be missing it or not recognizing it, what it is that nutrition really has to offer, apart from staying healthy and not get sick, and selecting the ones that will keep you healthy, avoiding the ones that will make you sick. I've heard a lot of answers, but then nature can't make organisms and don't leave instructions before. If the environment came before the organism, called man, then the environment would have the information as a model for the human race to experience its quality, not its quantity. And the model is left in a little fella called a caterpillar. It looks like a colon. You ever see how a caterpillar looks? And all it does from the time it's born to the time it's ready to phase out is eat. It doesn't work and do anything else. But what is so unique about this caterpillar, it knows when to phase out. And when it does phase out, it does a peculiar mechanics of its own, calling its phasing down time or cocoon stage. And approximately after 72 hours, a new life form is emerging out of that phase down stage. But this life form has one uniqueness about it. It is not crawling around to eat. It can fly. It's called a butterfly. Emerging from a caterpillar that can't do anything more than crawl around and eat. And of all the creatures that fly on this universe, there is none more beautiful than a butterfly. You ever look at it? You look at all the different creatures that can fly? Good. By the same token, I have never found a rotten butterfly, but I have deliberately made rotten caterpillars by smashing them to see what would happen in my research after they were crushed. What takes place? The tissue decomposes. I am made of tissue. I can decompose too. But why should a butterfly be a non-decomposing tissue emerging from a tissue that decomposes if it's taken out of its context? If you don't allow the caterpillar to go to its normal conclusive state of phasing down into a cocoon and transforming its cells into a butterfly, then what are we missing? There's something we are missing, because the same laws have to be in us, can be separate. It is when we turn to all the religions of the world and the various people who have done any type of extraordinary contribution to the world, not in terms of their writings or sayings, in terms of their mechanism of death, becomes the measuring stick. And those who have done anything that is contributive in that direction, we find the bodies don't decompose. And some didn't leave anybody to be buried either. They really flew away. That leaves us kind of puzzled.
Solid or crystalline state, is it going to be different by two? It's just that this is my thumb, this is my little finger. And this is my ring finger, and this is my index finger, and this is my middle finger. You want to give them identity of personality to satisfy the fact that you can differentiate. I know the doggone thing is my hand. That's the common name for it. So the five intelligences are these same five personifications, deification. Now, there's a reason for this deification of personification. For that. If somebody teaches you something that you never knew before, and every time you go to use that information, who would you give the credit to? Good. So, the spiritual man is a man who does not tear down the traditional source of his information, because it is what? It is the axis of his life. It is his life axis. It is his source of point of reference for his traditional makeup. And by so doing, he keeps the personification of his alma mater going for him as a means of a lightness blanket. With a pivot of the now, which you can have no strength without any reference, because it doesn't have any credence if you don't have any reference to which you get the knowledge from.
But by having a reference, you put a value on it.
And therefore that becomes a life action.
And that puts you back into duality.
But you need a duality in order to survive with the optics and sonics. If you don't have a duality or a yin yang, you can't string yourself up in no way. So a colossal illusion is necessary for a delusion to give the feeling of a reality being the ideal, when there is no reality but the ideal. And what is the ideal? I-D-E-A-L. It's a gambler's game, providing you your dealer with your eyes. Deal yourself first when you come into this universe as a God man. Then everybody else is God people. If you deal yourself in last and everybody else is God, then you may end up being a similar being. See, a master is one who deals himself for this. When Jesus says, God among men, and his name is Emmanuel, he coming down as an avatar, he deals himself in first. The God man has to deal himself first. The real self first. Therefore, this is not my kingdom, I don't deal myself a kingdom with it. He deals the realization where he is from or what he is, when he decides to act upon the phenomenal stage. The phenomenal stage is the transitory condition of his senses. So he cannot lay claim to this and say, this is what I belong to, this is what I gotta die for. No. I is dying for anything, I am coming for anything, I is I within the I itself. And it is aloof. But as long as it goes to remain aloof, it must deal itself the highest state of the I. I am that I am. I and the Father are one, that's the highest state the I can stay in. And as long as I stay in that state, then now I can say, okay, I can go in this transitory state and be cheerful.
Amen.
Alright. Amen. These are all terms in which to reinforce your divine I-ness over the minuscule, minor, mini I-ness that tends to be puffed up
You see, when we realize our self God, within the God that is created for us to respect, we will realize that we are respecting ourselves. But it's very difficult to respect or worship yourself because the subconscious mind is a guilty, safety factor to make you feel guilty that you are a negative.
Why do you say that the guilty safety factor?
If you were allowed to have a runaway with your ego, dear friend, you would destroy yourself before you ever got started. Because there would be no break. What is a break in the first place in a car? A built-in safety factor for that car, or else the car would be running down the hill without any brake, and the car is designed to run, it's designed to stop and brake. What do you buy a car for? To drive it, right? And the motor, which is the important part of the motor car. That motor. So why do you put the stinky little brakes on? It is a big 3 or 40 horsepower engine. I'm the big jig of this machine. And the rinky dinky brakes is the biggest one. Yeah, he's got to go. So far, he's got to go. Just like this, this mechanism here. I am the big thing. So what really makes you go, hey man, that little, your complex thing in there is just
that's an automatic natural structure thing, an unconscious realm to control something. But it's possible to drive a car without brakes.
I'm not saying that.
It takes skill.
Alright, if it takes skill, spell skill backwards and see what you got.
LLISIKS.
You get to mix it. And if you take away your S, you can kill yourself with it. SKILL?
How can you kill yourself and not yourself?
Your S is yourself.
So you lose yourself?
SKILL, you know, you can do it to yourself if you're not that dissipating factor. You blow your cool. Even
call no man master.
Say the Lord is in you. But what is the Lord in you?
You.
The control is the Lord in you. That's the name of the guy. His name is Mr. Control. The built-in safety factor that makes you differentiate and discern why you can't let yourself run into a random mechanic of existence. Though existence is dependent upon random behavior, organize itself into an integrity of average law, which appears to be order. So out of this randomness, an order comes into manifestation. And then we love the order because it gives us a sense of security in the randomness of chaoticness. So God loves chaos because he is a chaos in total order. There couldn't be anything more orderly than chaotic order. And that's what God is, actually, his total immensity. And this immensity is in a vast, gigantic number. You only can really appreciate the immensity when you get off in space and see how ridiculous our little minds are to the mass magnitude of this chaos, rolling along in total harmony.
On that point there, the immensity, God speaks spoken of the physical realm being a small, little bubble hanging on top of the balloon. But we're also told to get into this, to go within, not outward, but within, to the center. And these other worlds, the vibratory rate, but you're getting smaller and finer. So it tells me you're just landing on worlds on an electron and so on down the subatomic particles right on down, which in other words, you know, if you get associated with an electron, look how big this is. And then,
as far as you retreat inward into your sub state, is that far how you advance in your super state? Super is no bigger than sub state, depending upon the direction.
Inverse square law.
All right. So we find that we're living in a mathematical universe.
The further you swing out, you gotta have a stronger anchor.
And if you live in a circle, you throw a ball against the wall of the circle, would it react to it faster when it comes back to you, or it will come back in the same strength that you throw it? Would it get weaker in its return? What would happen to it? Would it continue to return out and in? Would you have perpetual motion? You live within a circle and you sit in the center and you take your ball, same shape of the circle you live in, and you throw it out or from you with a certain thrust or momentum, you let go forth, back and forth into infinity as a state of perpetual motion. Or will it stop and slow down and come back to the center where it's thrown out? Or it will just keep going on back and forth from wall to wall in a perpetual state.
Is it a closed system?
Yeah. We don't have any open system in the first place.
That's true. But when it's true. That's why it's hard to speak of these things.
Now you know why.
Because you keep falling back and back and back. Where's your reference?
Your reference is simply this, that you're a creation, not a creator.
Yeah.
And you're only left to accept, not that's the truth, you're left to accept the fact that you are nothing but a scapegoat in the plan designed for the depreciation of some guy who says he's a creator. You know, this is a creation. Let's say the four of us decided to put it together and give it individuality and it can talk back to us. But no matter how it talks out to us and proves to itself that it is a truth, it is the four of us who put it together, it ain't going to satisfy this character, because we know he just put himself together, he put it together. In our minds, we put it together. In his mind, he's really telling us he put himself together. That's exactly what we are. We are the creation. In our mind, we're telling this creative intelligence that we put ourselves together. And he's looking at it and says, continue, my son. Have your game, have your ball. When you're satisfied that you didn't put yourself together, you will see now why I am here. And in my didactic way, or my ridiculous way, and in my traditional way, or in my religious way, or in my helter-skelter stupidity way, you will accept me as Father Mother God, wake up every Sunday morning, ding dong, go to church, push the key in the door, accept the ritual, and continue to worship me sitting outside here. The only person that the movie actor has respect for is the owner of the business that keeps that movie factory going, otherwise he's out of business. Otherwise, you have no respect for nobody. He's top dog and everything.
But the movie actors only act because they know the owner and they know they receive wages. But what about the actors, the audience, or how does the actors keep acting that don't know it, that don't know the owner?
They
like, don't get the wages.
Those are like people who walk in the street until they step on a wet blanket. Or a pool of wet water, and then they wake up from the sleep to the dream of sleepwalking. You know, I used to encounter people who were sleepwalking. And the cure for them is put a blanket wet right at the side of the bed. And let them go through that they're sleeping on the. And when they're free, they're going to get up in the night and do the sleepwalking. As soon as they get up and step on that wet blanket, they wake up. Or that wet towel. Jump right up, they open right up, they're shocked, curious. They're awake for the first time and then they realize positively without doubt that they do walk in the street. Now when we get this root shock, when we get this root shock from our sleep walking in the consciousness that we are so-called creators, we can do nothing wrong, and that we have no one to account for or account to. The root shock is that we wake up and see ourselves acting a pre-arranged program to suit the producer. and then we accept our role, that we are working for wages, and the wages is called bliss. Now, the wages of sin, or missing the mark of stupidity, is death, which is somnambulism, a form of going back to sleep again. And the wages of understanding, or non-stupidity, if you want to call it that way, is the waking up, the rude awakening up, and that is acceptance. And not death, but to learn the first two. But you need the first one to help you with the second one in order to appreciate the third one. That's what I believe in. These are the gifts of evolution. Without the first one, without the communion with the faith, that means without the contact with the same person who has got the foresight on how to modify the second condition, forgiveness of sin, or how I missed the mark in my ignorance because I'm not fully saved, I can be classified as insane in many levels by the irrational actions of my behavior. But because the first one, I can't do handle the second one. But then with the contact of the first one, I can handle the second one. This gives me the benefit of the third one. Life eternal, which I don't refuse acting the role, or trying to connect the role, and my importance in the role. Good. Now you reduce the working into a blah.
Where does this concept of the very, well, I want to say that love.
I love that one. What love that one?
Evolved?
Yeah. So, what is
it? It's not new. This is I'm starting to see
you. Yeah. So, there is no end to evolution. This is evolution of the first time. When we evolve, we are talking of colossal time lapse within a creative span of immediacy. So when we look outwardly, it's an evolution in terms of time lapse. When we look inwardly, that same evolution is a creation because it satisfies mental immediacy. The mental immediacy is that I think of something inside and it seems to appear geometrically as a shape so instantaneously that it is considered from that level creativity. Now if I can shift the optical illusion of looking outward and see, and I say to that stock, get big. The immediacy suddenly takes over and that stock starts multiplying into quantity. Now I have bypassed, which I started in the first place, the painful repetition of doing it with my hands through machinery. So the fast immediacy of seeing it stacking up. What am I really saying to myself? I'm a doggone lazy LOB and I want to do the thing without working for it. So we look for miracles to evade action. Our laziness of our body, that's what an LOB is. We don't want to let the body do anything, so we tend to become lazy. And we want to make our minds do it all.
Somebody asked me that last night, what was the worst old life?
Lazy old body of ours. That's what it is. Laziness of the body is what makes for the evasion. Now, I'm not going to say that there are not times that the body needs to be lazy. When you understand the word lazy in its true sense, not from its negative sense, but its positive sense, you need laziness in a positive sense, not in a negative sense. In a negative sense, laziness is evasion. Laziness in a positive sense is rejuvenation. You see, you have to rejuvenate your body, and therefore a cellular laziness is necessary.
Well, that's active laziness.
Good. That type of laziness is an art. It's the art of how to rejuvenate yourself
how to take things easy. I'm not getting flustered under the stress around me from the environment. It is the art of being. The art of being. Just plain art of being. You know, I guess as I video told my friend, he knew the art of how to be lazy. He wake up in the morning, he fill his cup with a cup of coffee, and fill a whole gallon of hot water and pour the whole thing in there. Then he took a sack of cigarettes and he would stop in the cigarette and drink the coffee. It's more, I love you, the little things I need to do. Man, I will love you, there's nothing like you. I live with a prayer. You want a mantra? I don't think there's a better mantra than, man, I love you. Look where you come out to turn out to be. A human being. Man, this eye is fantastic. I, of all things, the number one. Number one. I am number one. A human being. Big and
ill. Tell us about his good feet again.
Alright. Well, you understand what the person is doing. Then you understand that the person was very close to reality of what truth is all about. In the simplicity and in the so-called comedy of it, that is the real truth. The truth of biological existence. Without any more pretense. It is strictly fundamental evaluation of fundamental acceptance. All the sin but Jesus said, loving the Lord thy God with all of your mind, all of your heart and soul and your neighbor as yourself. No better self than you. Me, I love me. We were saying a friend, a really good example. We talked to him about loving yourself, you know, before you can love everybody. So here we had one big rose on the table. And he says, when they all, we put down the food there, he says, Adano, you always talk about loving your neighbor yourself. So he said, if you don't mind, I demonstrate my version of this. So he took his plate, he reached over to the rose, and he cut off 3/4 of the rose to put it in his plate. He says, I love myself, the rest is for you guys. And they just didn't do it. I said, that's very good, Jeffrey. At least you're honest with yourself. Now, we don't think you're bluffing. Now, we don't think you're stingy. We think you love yourself so much that you'll get a bellyache, but don't give it to us. That's how we love you. Now, you think that portion of this whole road that they give you your bellyache, are we thankful that you're eating it and we may eat that portion and give us bellyache? And the portion that you named us may not give us a bellyache. You see, one man's food is not a man's gander. Wherever you must seek your bot, you go into this movie. Balcony? Front row? Or dealer's chair.
One of the postmen.
Alright. Make sure you buy a dealer's chair next time. Or the man who's made the baton. It's a beautiful position to enjoy the show. The whole thing is a show. You just don't want to act. Daddy does provide us a beautiful movie. He's the producer, the director, the owner. He's his own audience. He's his own actor. But he likes us to fool ourselves that we're doing it. We put it all together. You know something? The actor is such a naive individual. He believes he put the whole picture together. He believes that he makes all the box office and all the people that go around applauding him. You know who put the thing all together? The U.S. Treasury Department.
Not you, us.
That's right, the U.S. Treasury Department. Us little fellows who mark that little piece of paper says, we pay for John Smith to be on the board. Or we, you know, that money that goes to put the thing out in operation. Substance. divine substance makes it work.
Question.
Right.
If the tree is cut, if a tree falls in the middle of the forest, when you hear something, you pay no attention to how you hear it, simply because it's an automatic behavior for you to interpret or compute what's passing through your ears. That's hearing. When you're listening, you're making a determined effort to synchronize with what you want to listen with in order to differentiate what is it you're listening from or to. You see? So when a musician is playing, he's not hearing notes, he's listening to notes. But an audience is not a musician, and they are hearing music. They go to hear the music, they don't go to listen to the music. We, the audience, hear the musician play. But the musician, he's not hearing what the audience is hearing. He's listening to what he has to play unless he makes a mistake. So he has to keep on what is called measured audition with his nerves. Whereas the audience who listens, are not doing that. They are hearing. They go there to hear the entertainment. They go to be entertained. So they don't know when he's making a mistake or when he's not making a mistake or he missed a note or not. And how many can tell us the Gogan missed a note? Even them don't know. Even the conductor don't know himself, because the Gogan has mucked it through many a times and masked it right on his own recording. And they never found out until one day he spoke it at what is called a master seminar. He says a good musician who knows the score can play it so uniquely, he's missing this one bar, it could never be known. Because he can synchronize other notes to some to match it, that even the best conductor would have to listen. This was telling Charlie Bird that, in a conversation between him and Charlie Bird, he says, therefore, in the art of music, do not be overly concerned about what your audience listens or hears, or what you, a musician, have to listen to or hear. Be more concerned with the continuity of the piece, that you don't bring a harsh note into a soft note to create a jar. So because music is not what is notation correct or auditional sonic correct, because that's not the purpose of music. Because if a man is going to look all the time or hear accurately the score and lose the gist of the score, he's not musically inclined. Versus the person who only wants to hear the flow of the music. He says, and there have been two guys who were ideal at this, Kreisler and Heifetz. They were able to play the music where even when they were making notation mistakes, sung it accurately even to the composer or to the director. Because they were imparting what is called flow to the music. And he said, that's when the whole purpose of music, and that's why he chose the guitar over the violin. He used to be a violinist before, and he was a constant violinist, and he was way up in top as a boy at 18 years old when he discovered the guitar. It's because he found that his violin may be too overconscious of notation and not enough flow, and only the gypsies were able to flow with his violin.
Now, they weren't conscious of notes. They weren't interested in notes. They were interested in slow music. Then he switched to the guitar, because the guitar had more to offer in terms of harmony on a bigger scale like a piano. And he could go into the low notes and the high notes and the bass. And then he switched over to the guitar. So he would play he could play the guitar like a chamber music or play like a flamenco instrument. He chose the classical guitar. He actually made the guitar famous by bringing out the flow. He gave the guitar flow for the first time. Now one would say, here's a maestro of the guitar and plays the guitar with such great quality and is recognized by the world. And if you ask him personally, Mr. Segovia, what kind of guitar music do you like to listen to?